Hare Krishna. I welcome all the devotees, guests, visitors to our daily class on Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. We have reached chapter 14, text 9. This text is written on the board here today. So I'll chant the verse first. If somebody wants to chant, then he can repeat later. Sattvam sukhe sanjayati Rajah karmani bharata Jnanam mavritya tu tamaha Pramade sanjayatyuta. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: O son of Bharat, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Passion conditions one to fruitive action. And ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Purport: A person in the mode of goodness is satisfied by his work or intellectual pursuit, just as a philosopher, scientist or educator may be engaged in a particular field of knowledge and may be satisfied in that way. A man in the mode of passion may be engaged in fruitive activity. He owns as much as he can and spends for good causes. Sometimes he tries to open hospitals, give to charity institutions, etc. These are signs of one in the mode of passion. And the mode of ignorance covers knowledge. In the mode of ignorance, whatever one does is good neither for him nor for anyone. So in our journey through the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, we have reached the last part. If you check the last part, that is the last six chapters, the 13th chapter was nature, the enjoyer and consciousness. This is the three modes of material nature. Then there are the divisions. Then there is a description of divine and demoniac natures. And finally we have the conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. The last six chapters have been analyzed by our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur especially, that it gives us jnana, it gives us knowledge. If you see the 13 chapter contents, 14 chapter now, the modes of material nature, this is knowledge, knowledge about the world around us, knowledge about how this world functions, how people in this world are bound by different desires, by different actions. What is it that is impelling them to act in certain ways? So this is the knowledge that we are getting here. Interestingly, this chapter is titled The Three Modes of Material Nature. The title itself is making it clear that this is going to be about the material world. Now if somebody is reading the Gita, surely enough, he is not trying to get knowledge about the material world from the Gita. That may be presented to him in due course of his study. But usually if I want to know about geography, I want to know about history, I want to know about chemistry, physics, things about this world, I would rather refer to textbooks of these subjects rather than to search in the Gita all these subjects. However, we find that Krishna, by his super intelligence and his ability to understand what is good for us, in the mood of the best doctor, not only gives us information about the spiritual world that is beyond this world, not only he gives us information about you and me, us, that we are spirit souls, we are not products of matter, not only does he tell us about what is karma, not only does he tell us about what is time, which is the supermost controller in this material manifestation, but he is also giving us information about prakriti. The five topics of the Bhagavad Gita: Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala and Karma. So Prakriti sometimes could put off somebody. Why in a book like Bhagavad Gita, where it's a divine, sacred conversation between the Supreme Lord and his pure devotee, why would so much discussion would be about this world? If one ponders over it, one can understand that when the Lord wants to help us, he wants to help us in the best possible way. So he is not just giving us something that will help us in the future, something that is relevant to us after some time, after some purification, but he wants to give us something that will help us right now, right here, at this moment. So he is giving us something that can help us at this moment. At the same time, he gives us knowledge about the spiritual world, where we aspire to go, which is our ultimate goal of life. But as we are aspiring for it, as we are trying to get there, as we are trying to purify ourselves, he is also giving us practical knowledge. He is also telling us about the modes of material nature, which are dominant here. Everyone is being controlled by these modes, either in Sattvagun, Rajagun or Tamogun. This shows the Lord's concern for us. This shows the Lord's sensitivity for us, that I know him and he is an aspiring devotee, and due course of time I will surely guide him back home, back to me, my abode. But right now when he is there, let me inform him about the different things that are possible during his stay in the material world. When he is there, he may be caught up in different emotions, he may be caught up in different activities, in different moods. I need to help him steer clear of these obstructions, of these possible impediments also. So that's why we have this discussion of the three modes of material nature. Just to go through the first few verses, it's important to understand. In the first verse of this chapter, today we are on the ninth verse. So first verse, Krishna says, I shall tell you the supreme wisdom today, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. Then he says, by becoming fixed in this knowledge, that is the modes of material nature, knowledge about the modes of material nature, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. So by studying what is happening around us today, Krishna is saying that we'll in due course of time, one day, we'll attain to his transcendental nature. It means study of this knowledge is going to propel us forward. He is sure the way he has presented knowledge is not going to keep us bound here, is not going to keep us attracted here. If you read, like I started off by saying that we could refer to other textbooks focusing on certain subjects of this world. Usually what happens when people, let's say I am a chemist, let's say I am doing research in chemistry, I open a textbook of chemistry, I start doing my research in there. What happens is the study usually leads me more and more towards attaching myself to that study. That's why you have people who do BSc in chemistry, then they do MSc in chemistry, sometimes they go for post-graduation in chemistry. We have so much research that is possible in these subjects. So how is this knowledge of the material world different from the knowledge of the material world that is presented in those subjects? When you study those books that describe things of this world, you get more and more attracted to them. You get more attracted to the energy rather than the energetic. However, when Krishna talks about the material world here, he is talking about three modes of material nature, he is talking about the divisions of faith, he is going to talk about the divine and demoniac natures. When we hear even mundane knowledge from the words of the Supreme Lord, our distaste for this world will increase. We'll become detached. So even though the description is of this world, yet when we resort or when we take shelter of those books, it's going to make us more and more attached to this place. But when we hear the same knowledge about this mundane world from the Supreme Lord, it's going to increase our detachment from this world. That's why there is an advantage in studying everything from the scriptures. The foundation of the scriptures is to get detached slowly from this material world and get attached to the spiritual world. So even when it comes to studying architecture, say Ayurveda, which is medicine, engineering science, Dhanurveda, which is artillery science, but when we study these sciences in the scriptures, there is no chance that we will get attached to these sciences more and more in and of itself. We may get engrossed in study of these scriptures to use them in the service of the Lord. That can happen. We may become expert in these sciences. Yes, when The people of the past ages constructed big, big temples in glorification of the Lord. They had to become engrossed in the studies of architecture. They had to be very excellent architects. However, their knowledge, their love for that subject pushed them to use it in glorification of God. Today also we have very nice buildings. Today also we have very nice wonders of architecture. However, there is no God element there. So today also people are expert in these mundane sciences, and some years back they were also expert in these sciences. However, the only difference was they studied these material sciences, knowledge about this material world from the scriptures. And because of that, they never got attached to it. They always stayed clear of it. When the right time came, they used it in service of God. They went home back to Godhead themselves. In text 3, Krishna says how he impregnates material nature. That he is the seed giving father. In the text 4, he says, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya, Aham Bija Pradhapita. And then from text 5 onwards, this discussion of the three modes of material nature starts. So I was just wondering, when Krishna is directly telling, the title of this topic is Three Modes of Material Nature, where is the connection that he introduces this topic as a very important topic, and then he is talking about who he is and how the spirit souls come into this nature that he impregnates. So my understanding of this is, sometimes we see a person, to give an example to understand this, sometimes we could come across a person belonging to a very nice family, coming from an educated background, cultured family. He leaves his home, comes to some other place for studying, comes to some other place for doing a job. But now, because of separation from his original culture, because of separation from the values that were being inculcated in him by his parents, he falls into wrong association. And suddenly he starts doing activities which are not very favorable for him, which are in fact directly opposite to the values that have been taught to him. So sometimes when somebody would meet him, he would say, my dear friend, what are you up to now? Do you know what high parentage you are from? Do you know who your mother is? Do you know who your father is? Your mother and father are such cultured people. I know them. And here you are, these activities, they don't befit you. You should immediately give up these activities. You should try to improve yourself. When Vyasdev is confused and when Narad Muni visits him, Narad Muni also asks this question. He calls him Parasharya. He says, oh son of Parashara Muni, how come you are confused like this? And then Vyasdev reciprocating calls him, you are the son of Lord Brahma, so now you are fit to dispel my doubts. So it's like, you are the son of such a nice father, and how could you be in such a doubt? And he reciprocates by saying, oh, you know what? Yes, I am in illusion. I have doubts. But you are the son of Lord Brahma. Your parentage is also very nice. So now you can help me. So something similar, Krishna here also is saying, who am I? I am the Supreme Father. And who is the mother? Material nature. So if these spirit souls have such high parentage, if they are my children, Aham Bija Pradhapita. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan Ki Jai. If I am the father, and if I am the person who is giving life to them, why are they caught up in these material modes of nature? There is no need for them to get caught up in these activities. And then he starts off by these descriptions of the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. We could go through that, and certainly people before me have discussed in detail, I am sure, what are the characteristics? What are the characteristics of the mode of goodness? What are the characteristics of the mode of passion, and what are the characteristics of mode of ignorance? Thanks. One thing which also came to my mind is, why is there a need for us? Let's say I am in the mode of goodness. Assuming, I in the sense, all of us, we think that, you know, I am in the mode of goodness because as per Krishna's description, the mode of goodness is the best amongst these three. You are in the prison, you are to be bound by shackles. There's going to be shackles which will prevent you from escaping from the prison. But what people could do is, they could choose shackles made of gold, or they could choose shackles made of silver, or by default, at least, there are going to be shackles made of iron. However, all three are shackles, but yes, within that, gold is the highest. So one could say, see, I don't know all this analysis. Let's assume that I'm in the mode of goodness. Even if somebody says that, why is there a need then to study the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance? Why? Because in the coming verse, the next verse, that is the 10th verse, Krishna says, it's not that when a person is born in some mode and he is in that mode stays permanent. Even that is not the case. In another part of the Gita, Krishna has described this world as Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. Ashashvatam means temporary. Temporary means whatever state you are in now is not going to be permanent. On a bodily level, on a mental level, on the consciousness level. Everything is subject to fluctuation. Anything and everything here is always changing. So if somebody says, I am in the mode of goodness now, I am here in the temple, I every day in the evening come here to the temple, I take darshan, I feel so nice. However, my dear sir, you have to be alert that the moment you step outside this temple, the other modes could gain prominence over you. As soon as you step outside the temples, you could be again thrown back into the mode of passion, lower mode, or the lowest, which is the ignorance. That's why, even though we may be well off now, we need to have an understanding of what is the mode of passion, of what is the mode of ignorance, so that we may stay clear, so that it does not affect us. Usually when you start a war, let's say there is a war between two countries. Before starting of the war, one country would always like to get a proper estimate of the strength of the opposite side. How much soldiers do they have? How much strength do they have? Who is the leader there? In the past wars, how have they won? How have they lost? What were their mistakes? What were their advantages? One would want to know. Similarly, when we have come to spiritual life, when we want to transcend these modes, study of these modes is not to help us become engrossed more and more, as I discussed previously. It is to help us stay clear. In our school textbooks, in our college textbooks, when we study of different diseases in biology, it is not that, you know, we want to get those diseases, but to prevent those diseases. So to prevent yourself from something, study is essential. Similarly, the study of material modes of the modes of material nature is necessary to keep ourselves clear of these modes. Just like keeping a understanding, trying to get first hand information about the opposite army. I know there is going to be a war. I know I am going to get affected by these modes. Now, what is the strength? How do I identify which mode am I in? How to counter that mode? How to stay clear of those problems? Interestingly, sometimes in the modern world, wars are fought in three ways. Sometimes you fight it on the ground level. Most of the times they'll just throw bombs from the air. And now recently also, you know, when we had an attack on Bombay, the infiltration happened through the sea. They came by the sea. So I was just thinking, there are the three modes of material nature. And talking of this example of a war between two countries, you could have attack from three sides. You could have attack from the ground, you could have attack from the sky, and you could have attack from the sea. So something like that. All of us, we are very pure. Our father is Krishna. Krishna is saying in this chapter itself, fourth verse, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya Aham Bija Pradapita. Yet, even though we are pure, we are being attacked by these three modes. That's why it's necessary. Then what is the hope? The hope is that because we are pure, because of we have such a high parentage, we can also get help. It's inborn in us. That is our natural position, to be pure. And in a diseased condition, we have been put into this distressful condition. So it's just a question of purifying ourselves. If we purify ourselves, these modes will eventually wash off. We'll be again reinstated in our position of nirmalatva. We'll be nirmal without any contamination. Let's just talk a little bit about goodness, passion and ignorance. People have discussed this, but there are some additional points. Krishna in this verse, he describes the mode of goodness as prakashakam and anamayam. So prakash is like light. And light is many of the times compared to knowledge. Somebody says, tamasoma jyotirgamaya. From ignorance go to knowledge. From ignorance go to knowledge. From darkness go to light. So prakashakam means you have the light of knowledge. So when somebody is in knowledge, he is supposed to be in the mode of goodness. Anamayam is he is free of all contamination. The mode of passion is described as Trishna and Trishna Sangena. రజో రగాత్మకం విద్ధి తృష్ణ సంగం సముద్భవం తాన్ నిబద్ధంతి కౌంతయ్య కర్మ సంగేన దహీనం. సో వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్ తృష్ణ అండ్ సంగ? వీ హ్యావ్ మల్టిపల్ డిజైర్స్ ఇన్ అవర్ హార్ట్, ఎస్పెషలీ ఎస్పెషలీ ఏ పర్సన్ ఇన్ ద మోడ్ ఆఫ్ ప్యాషన్. సో హీ డిజైర్స్ మెనీ థింగ్స్. దట్ ఇస్ ద థర్స్ట్ ఫర్ అక్వైరింగ్ థింగ్స్. దట్ ఈస్ తృష్ణ, థర్స్ట్. అండ్ ఇఫ్ హీ డస్ నాట్ గెట్, ఇఫ్ దట్ థర్స్ట్ ఈస్ నాట్ సాటిస్ఫైడ్, దెర్ ఈస్ if he does not get it, there is Krishna, there is thirst, and if he gets it, there is attachment to that, to that object that he gets. So in this way he is bound by karma sangena bharata, that he is bound up by actions. But how are those actions? To get something. So fruitive actions, to get some fruit out of that action. Ignorance Krishna describes in the 8th verse. Yes, 8th verse, he says, tamas tu agyanajam vidhi. Tu, the word tu means but. So he describes goodness in certain qualities, he describes passion in certain qualities, but when it comes to describing ignorance, the first description is, tu means, it is opposite of what has been discussed before. So the first qualification of the mode of ignorance is, it is directly opposed to the mode of goodness, and it is directly opposed to the mode of passion. We just saw mode of goodness is characterized by knowledge and happiness, prakashakam anamayam, and the mode of passion is characterized by activity. So what would mode of ignorance mean if it is opposite to those two? It would mean there is no knowledge, there is just ignorance. Usually a person would be bereft of all knowledge, he does not know many things. He would be distressed because he is not in happiness. Those two are the characteristics of somebody in the mode of goodness, and ignorance is opposite to that. And mode of passion is characterized by activity. So a person in the mode of ignorance would also be inactive. So that are the characteristics of somebody in the mode of ignorance. Now, if somebody is in the mode of goodness, what would happen to him? If he does not work, if he does not elevate himself from that position, surely he is going to degrade lower to the mode of passion. And if somebody does not take care to maintain himself in the mode of passion, if he is already there, he is surely going to degrade to the mode of ignorance. The spiritual quest of raising your consciousness is sometimes compared to swimming across the flow of a river. The river flows downwards. The whole world is going in one direction, and devotees or people who are aspiring to be devotees, they are flowing in the opposite direction. Not many people are interested in spirituality. So even if somebody has reached a certain position in his journey upwards in the reverse way, and he is not struggling, the whole flow of the river is going to push him back. He is going to be swept away by the waves of that river. That's why it's always important for somebody to be in the mode of passion, to at least maintain himself in the mode of passion. It's very important for somebody in the mode of goodness, although it is not the highest, but at least maintain himself there. Otherwise, there's going to be degradation. If you are an active person, you may be doing it for fruitive results. You may be desiring many things in return for your actions, but at least you are doing some actions. At least you are acting. At least you are not sleeping. At least you are not inactive. Recently there is this Gau Gram Yatra going on. They are taking a huge procession of cows, and people who are supporting that cow protection, they are taking this huge procession of cows throughout India. Recently it has come to Bombay. So the person who started that is a sannyasi. I don't remember the name. I think it is Raghavendra something. But he spoke a very nice sentence. He said, dangerous are not those who oppose you, dangerous are those who are indifferent. So you may be having some cause in your life, and there may be people who may be opposing you, but they are not dangerous. They'll keep you alert. They'll make you do something to prove how much interested you are, how much committed you are in what you are doing. But people who are indifferent, people who are just stuck up in their own world, people who don't want to help you, and neither they want to oppose you, he said, they are the most dangerous. And that's why, to raise awareness, they are taking this procession to help people understand how important is cow protection, how important it is to protect our Vedic culture. So something like that, that people in the mode of ignorance, they are just indifferent. They don't act neither for good, neither for bad. If somebody is acting for bad reasons, for the wrong reasons, at least you can go to him, talk to him, convince him how what he is doing is destructive. How what he is doing is not good for anybody. But if somebody is just not acting, whole day he is just sleeping, whole day he is just lazy, how will you shake him from his slumber? It's very difficult. That's why although the mode of passion is not the best, is not linked to spirituality directly, at least it's recommended to be in the mode of passion than to be in the mode of ignorance. Now higher still is the mode of goodness, where also there is activity, but that activity is based on knowledge. What is the knowledge? Knowledge is, I have been doing so many things, I have been acting for so many reasons from my childhood, and I always thought, by doing this, I am going to be happy. I thought about this in my school also, I thought about this in my college also, now I am working, even now I get those thoughts. Just by doing this, happiness is just around that corner. Just tomorrow morning, I have these problems, problem number one, problem number two, problem number three. If I do this, problem number one is going to be fixed. If I do that, problem number two is going to be fixed. And I just have to adjust a little things here and there, and problem number three is fixed. In this way, all my problems are solved. Tomorrow, I am going to be happy. Tomorrow, with the sunrise, there is going to be a new phase in my life, the phase of happiness. All of us have been working on this principle since we don't know how long. Every day, something wrong happens to us. Some reversal, somebody speaks in a rough way to us. Things don't work out the way we want them to work out. And we think, oh, it's just a matter of some adjustments. I'll do this, I'll speak to this person, I'll get things done using my influence, and now things will be done. That's it. But we should see, it has neither worked in the past, it's not working in the present. What is the guarantee that it will work in the future? And that's why Matra Sparshastu Konte, that we have to learn to tolerate. Instead of adjusting to situations, we have to learn to tolerate to situations. There's no point in fiddling with the way we have been allotted our karma. Our actions in the past have determined the present state in which we are, and now we want to create further karma by trying to fiddle with that. Instead of that, a person in the mode of goodness, he just accepts whatever is happening to him based on knowledge, not based on ignorance, like a person in the mode of ignorance would. So anyways, this is a brief understanding of three people who are in goodness, passion and ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance, because he produces nothing, there is no activity. He does not read any books, there is no knowledge, he does not teach anybody, neither he learns from anybody. What will he offer to God? Because till now we have been discussing about these three modes, that would be like discussing the disease. So we have been infected by this contamination. However, in my presentation, if I don't inform you about the medicine for that disease, it's not going to be a perfect solution. So we'll just try to see, yes, we are in the mode of goodness, passion or ignorance, or a mix of both, mix of all these three. But now how to come out of it? So a person in the mode of ignorance, why is he the worst? Nothing to do with that mode. Only thing is, because he has no activity, because he has no knowledge, what will he do? How will you raise him up? He's not interested in anything. You tell him, please come to the temple. He says, why temple? You know, I have to sit here only. If God exists, let him come to my room. Let him manifest himself in front of me. Okay, fine. Don't come to the temple. Please read this Gita. Oh, you know, there are these so many verses, so many pages, English, Sanskrit mixed, I don't know anything. I'll not read. But he doesn't want to do anything. How will you help him? God helps those who help themselves. But this mode of ignorance, the person who is in the mode of ignorance, is out of that realm of this statement. He cannot be helped because he does not want to help himself. In this sense, the mode of passion is better because at least that person is doing activity and he is doing it for his personal enjoyment. So what one could do is, you can just convince him, my dear friend, you have been accumulating so many things for yourself. What I'll suggest is, you keep a majority of those things for yourself, little part of that. Can you give it to God? Can you give it to Krishna? You are earning so much money, out of that, can you give some small donation to the Supreme Lord? And anyways, because he's earning so much money, because he's in the passion, a little money here and there does not matter much to him. Immediately gives, his connection with Krishna is established. He has given something to Krishna. Yad karoshi yad ashnasi. Whatever you do it as an offering to me. So he has done that offering. Although, when he did that activity, when he was desiring to do that activity, he did not do it for giving it to Krishna. Yet, devotees suggested to him and he agreed. So there is a chance for his elevation. Mode of goodness, he is so much self-satisfied. Jnana sangena badnati, sukha sangena chanaga. Krishna describes that he is bound by a sense of happiness and he is bound by a sense of knowledge. I know so many things. Based on his knowledge, he has exposure to so many concepts, to so many things. When you try to give him knowledge about something else beyond this world, that he would not know. Because this world is limited and the spiritual world is unlimited beyond this material world. It's not visible to the naked eye. Unless you have Gyan Chakshush, unless you have knowledge eyes based on knowledge, Shastra, you would not know where is the spiritual world. It's not directly visible to our eyes. So a person who is in the mode of goodness, because he is knowledgeable in terms of things or facts about this world, in that sense it's difficult for him to advance beyond this world. But yet, because he is addicted to knowledge, he wants to read this book, he wants to read that book, and he wants to read all books. So in that, you can, you know, insert your Bhagavad Gita. You can insert your spiritual literature. You can tell him, see, you have been reading 10 books. Why not this 11th book? But he says, this is about some person called God, some person called Krishna. No problem. Why not? This is additional knowledge for you. He said, yes, yes. I want more knowledge. That's a person in the mode of goodness. You are already so happy. Why don't you read about people who are eternally happy? Yes, you are in the mode of goodness. More or less, you are always happy. But are there not some moments in your life when you are unhappy? Yes, yes. Some moments in my life, I am unhappy. So, would you like to read about people who are eternally happy, who are never in Kuntha, who are in Vaikuntha, never in anxiety? Yes, yes, I want to read. Please read this Bhagavad. So, that's the hope for somebody in the mode of passion and mode of goodness. But in the mode of ignorance, very difficult. Very difficult to shake him. That's why that mode is the lowest. Because there, the hopes for him to advance are the bleakest, are the, you know, weakest. Having discussed this, something that came to my mind is trying to give you an example so that you can carry something from this class home. And this mode of goodness, passion and ignorance, you know, you'll have a better understanding. So in the Ramayana, you have the family of Ravan. And I could just think of, I had heard it from Radha Gopinath Prabhu, but you know, I would like to just mention that here. That these three people in the same family, they very much characterize these three modes of material nature. If we want to understand what are these three modes, let us just look at these three brothers. Vibhishan, Ravan and Kumbhakarna. We have Vibhishan. Now Vibhishan is born in that family. Vibhishan is born in the family of these two demons. Their sister is Shurpanakha. Now these other three, Shurpanakha, Ravan and Kumbhakarna, if you just analyze their character, does not inspire us much. They don't have many good qualities. They may have some mystic powers. They may do certain things which we are not able to do. But they are not very desirable qualities that these people possess. But Vibhishan, although he is surrounded by those people, although he is raised in that environment in which these three other siblings are also raised, yet Vibhishan is special. When Sita Devi is brought forcibly by Ravan, he is the one who opposes. He says, don't do this. You already have so many ladies with whom, you know, you are enjoying. Why do you want to have Mother Sita there? So he is the one who opposes. Why would one possess such a strong, such a powerful, such an illustrious in that sense? Because he is the king and he has conquered so many kings, he has conquered so much wealth. He is a powerful person. Why would somebody oppose a powerful person? Is he a fool? No, he is not a fool. He knows what is right, he knows what is wrong. A person in the mode of goodness does not act upon the temporary situation in front of him. He acts based on the knowledge that he has. So he knows in due course of time the path on which my brother is walking, Ravan is walking, the activities that he is doing, the mood that he has. Whenever he sees somebody beautiful, he just thinks of enjoying her. In his palace, he had the best looking women from all over. If he saw somebody good looking, he would just think, this is for my enjoyment, just kidnap her, bring her. So he knew the way in which Ravan is acting is ultimately going to lead to his destruction. So in a fearless way, based on knowledge, he objected to his working. He said, don't do this, this is not good for you. He is not fearful of the consequences. Maybe his brother will kill him. But a person in the mode of goodness, because he has knowledge, he cannot just, you know, stay detached. He has to help others. If a person in the mode of goodness does not help others, what good is his knowledge? What good is all the good qualities that he has if he is not able to inspire others? So that is a special quality of Vibhishan, who we could say is an example in our particular situation that we are studying here, is in the mode of goodness. He directly objected and he informed clearly, the way you are acting is not good for you. You will be destroyed by Lord Ramchandra. The second person, Ravan, we all know. So much possessive about different things. Whatever he did in life, he never did it out of detachment. So what's in it for me? WIIFM. Whenever he saw something, whenever he saw somebody, he said, what's in it for me? How is this object going to give me pleasure? How is this thing going to give me pleasure? He did austerity, trying to please Lord Shiva, not to please Lord Shiva. For greater powers, for greater strength. So although he is worshipping Lord Shiva, which is very good, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambho, yet the objective that he has is, what's in it for me? By doing this austerity, by doing this worship of Lord Shiva, what will I get? How will I improve? How will I increase my sense enjoyment? So he's very active. He's always going here and there in his Pushpak Viman. So he's advanced in technology wise also. He has a Viman. He has a plane which can fly. But what is he using it for? Start of Ramayana, we have the example of Vedavati. Vedavati is doing tapasya, ascetic lady. But he had his eyes on her also. So one could do many good things with an airplane, but then he is using it for his passionate pursuits. So such a person is in the mode of passion. He is very active, eager for more and more enjoyment. His desires never get satiated. He is never satisfied. And the third brother is Kumbhakarna. What does Kumbhakarna do? What is he famous for most? To sleep for 6 months and be active for 6 months. When he used to wake up, he used to immediately need a lot of food. It's described, when he used to wake up, they needed to bring him a lot of food. So they had huge cart loads of foodstuff that he used to like. He used to be so hungry. And his hunger was so uncontrollable by him, the people who would push those carts, because Kumbhakarna was huge in size. So to satisfy his Jatharagni, you would need a lot of foodstuff. So when there would be so many laborers, there would be so many workers who would push that cart loads of food to him. Sometimes he would be so uncontrollable, in addition to the food that is being brought, he would also put those people also in his mouth. There's so much fire in me, I want to eat so much. The people who are serving him, he's picking them up and eating them. He's uncontrollable. He has so much desires. But what are those desires for? You know, mostly sleeping and causing destruction to others. Why did they wake him up from sleep? He was not supposed to get up at that time. His 6 months were not yet over. But why did they wake him up? They said, such a huge man, if he just goes on the battlefield, even before he tries to actually kill somebody, hit somebody, by his just sheer size, by his steps, he'll kill people. He's just so huge. So he has that quality of being huge. He has that great, enormous strength in him. But what is he using it for? For destruction. That is in the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada describes here in this purport today, 9th verse. And the mode of ignorance covers knowledge, jnanam avritya. In the mode of ignorance, whatever one does is good, neither for him nor for anyone else. That is Kumbhakarna. He is going to the battlefield only to be killed by Lord Ramchandra. But as he is doing that, his actions are not good for anybody else also. So that is, you know, we can understand, even if we don't remember all these different characteristics that we discussed about the mode of goodness and jnanam avritya and nirmalatvat and all those things. At least even if we remember these three people in the same family, we can understand what is the mode of goodness, what is the mode of passion, and what is the mode of ignorance. Now in this case, the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, these two examples, they did not get delivered. Kumbhakarna died and Ravan was slayed by Lord Ramchandra. However, Vibhishan, based on his knowledge, he took that wise step of rejecting his brother. In a war, when you give up one side and go to the other side, it's treason. It's not good, look upon as a good thing to do. He did that. He said, I don't want to be on the side of adharma. I want to be on the side of dharma. Although this army is strong, although this army is made up of these mighty rakshasas, each one empowered with mighty mystic powers. The whole palace of, whole city of Lanka is, you know, very amazing. And these people on the opposite are mere monkeys. Usually if somebody calls somebody else a monkey, he'll take it as an offense. Say, you monkey. So he'll not feel glorious. So on the opposite side, you have an army of monkeys. On this side, you have an army of mighty, powerful, mystic rakshasas. Yet, because he was in the mode of goodness, because he was exposed to knowledge, because he knows what is right, what is wrong, although his environment and his initial part of his life was not directly related to devotional service. He was not born in Ayodhya. He was not born in Mathura. He was not born in any such spiritually inclined kingdom. Yet, because he was in the mode of goodness, he could make that decision when the right time came. He took that decision. He said, no. I am risking my life, but I know what is right. I have to go to the other side. And he defected. He went to the side of Lord Ramchandra. And that is the perfection of life. To serve Lord Ramchandra. To serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, a person in the mode of goodness, it's possible for him based on his knowledge. So, that is the hope for us, that even though we may be in mode of ignorance, we may be in the mode of passion, and we may be in the mode of goodness. By these, I mean primarily. All of us are contaminated by all the three modes. Sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, sometimes the mode of passion is prominent, and sometimes the mode of ignorance is prominent. At least, even if we are not able to remember Krishna always, man mana bhava mad bhakto, at least if we try to keep ourselves as much as possible in the mode of goodness, there is a chance for us to go back home, back to Godhead. At least we can try to be in the mode of goodness. For that, knowledge is necessary. Knowledge is necessary means participation in these classes or similar classes is necessary. Reading of scriptures is necessary. When we read scriptures, we'll be enlightened. We will understand what is not. Then we can make that decision at the right time. If we don't know what is there in the Gita, if we don't know what is there in these books that Prabhupada has given to us, how will we make that right decision? We'll be just subjected to confusion all around. So that's why these activities that have been given to us by our acharyas, reading books, associating with devotees, they are very important. Chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, which will wash away the contamination in our heart. Cheto darpana marjanam. By these things, we will be getting more and more purified. Our contaminations will go away. More and more knowledge will arise in our heart. More and more we will be situated in the mode of goodness. And in this way, at the right moment, we will take that wise decision to go and serve Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, in his eternal abode at the end of our lives. So I'll stop here. If there are any questions, we can take some questions. If somebody has any comments, I'm welcoming those also. I'm just looking out for one point that I've written. I'm just, if I get it. Yeah, it's covered. All right, thank you for your patient listening. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti.